I think this last lecture should be devoted to B-brains. How much did you do anything with Kevin about sort of B-brains below the ones that beyond the ones that are used to define the system?
No, not really.
Okay, very good. So let's go back to the picture we had of open-closed duality. So open-closed duality.
Kevin talked about like D1 brains. He talked about how to couple a D1 brain to the.
But those were the ones that presumably you were using to make the holographic dual system.
Yeah.
We did D1 and D3 because like he was explaining this duality inside of the n equals 4 1.
Yes. So let's go back to open closed dualities. So now I'm going to do open plus open plus closed duality, which means that if you take a system which has, you know, a large stack of brains of one type and some other brain or some other type and closed strings, sorry, I should have not wiggled it. So NB plus B prime plus closed strings. This should be equivalent to some kind of back-reacted geometry. And now, where I do the back-reaction of these D-brains, but with this other brain B prime still there. I mean, deformed in some way, in the same way as the geometry was deformed. So a generalization of open-closed duality tells you that this system is equivalent to this system. Right? That if you probe this system by sending in some gravitons and bouncing them off, or by sending in some waves along this B prime string brain and having them scatter off, you'll get the same answer as if you were sending gravitons in here or fluctuations. So, and if you have a decoupling limit, what's going to happen now? What's going to happen is that the volume theory of B plus the B prime strings, open strings, will be dual to just the throat region, potentially with this, the throat piece of B prime. So somehow inserting these extra pieces in the quantum field theory will correspond to inserting this extra D brain in the dual. So this is how D brain appear in holography. You put some D brains in your anti de Sitter space or whatnot, and this corresponds to something, a brain that extends to the boundary at least. Brains that don't extend to the boundary are a different story, but brains that reach the boundary correspond to modifications of the quantum field theory at the place where the brain is meeting the boundary. That's the general holographic dictionary. And then if you change the boundary conditions of these, or the fields that live on this brain, that will correspond to modifying the sort of adding couplings or changing the couplings of this system. Okay, now we can be specific we can specialize to the case of the chiral algebra. But first, we have questions. Yes.
Does this break the UN H symmetry?
No, because so the usual for volume fields sort of live in the joint, roughly speaking. These fields live in the fundamental or anti-fundamental. Right, an open string stretch between a stack of brains and another brain will have n endpoints. Or I'll actually get n fields. Okay, so that's the first statement. I'm going to add fundamental and anti-fundamental degrees of freedom. Now, the next thing we should say is words about the toothed expansion. So we saw at some point, I think, that if you study, say, perturbative expansion for fields which live in the joint of UN, we can represent them as ribbons. And then the Feynman diagrams can be organized by the power of H bar and the power of N, where N comes from the closed loops. And then we can reorganize that in an expansion in powers of h bar and in powers of h bar n. And then if for every order in h bar, this sum is supposed to be convergent and reproduce the genus expansion, a certain term in the genus expansion of a string theory dual. Now, if I add fundamentals, this picture changes a little bit because the joints will look like double lines, but the fundamentals will look like single lines because they carry one index. Maybe I should put a sort of a dotted thing here for convenience. In a sense, it represents the brain B prime. These are open strings stretched between n copies of B and B prime. And so when you draw your diagrams now, you might have pictures like that. Maybe they might even include something like that. So these closed loops still give us factor of n, but these ones don't. Okay. And if we try to look at these diagrams as if they were, worksheets, we would fill in these holes, but we would not fill in these holes. So this would look like a worksheet that I would draw like this, for example. Yes. So here I have one. It gets confusing if I have external states, sorry. Let me just do something like that so that we don't have to worry. Okay. So this is going to look like an annulus. It's going to have in the dual string theory, this is a calculation which involves a strip, an annulus with two boundaries of the type B prime. So the toothed expansion tells us that if I had this should have a dual string theory. with deep brains. So in particular, right, every amplitude sort of will have terms that go like h bar to the 2 minus the genus minus twice the genus, sorry, minus the number of boundaries. So the partition function of the QFT, right, calculation of the QFT, will tend to look like I just say z. Like e to the 1 over h bar squared times genus, some genus 0 piece with no boundaries, which is just a closed string calculation. And then there will be perhaps 1 over h bar, which comes from the disk. And so on and so forth. So these are going to be the new things that you gain by having fundamentals. Okay. But so as we'll see today, the story can get slightly more interesting. So
sorry, before I go,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I asked just before, if I just have adjoint,
yes,
I can write down this beta gamma PC system and it has.
Well, I haven't talked about that yet. I will discuss the Carroll algebra momentarily.
Right.
For now, just perhaps this is a good time to start discussing what I mean concretely. For the Carroll algebra. But first I wanted to sort of make one more general statement, which is that in my study situations, I have a collection of brains. And maybe that's what will happen. You know, each individually will give me the contribution that a deleting order will give me the contribution that I would have gotten otherwise, so that I get something like, you know, a contribution with brain one, where the boundary is made out of fields of one type of fundamentals, and a contribution from brain two. And that is the naive thing that the toothed expansion will give me. So if I believe the toothed expansion, I would pretty much say that if I add 13 different types of fundamental fields to my theory, I will just be adding 13 brains to the dual string theory, each doing its own thing, and then contributions from open strings stretch between them. But actually, the story is slightly more interesting, because what can happen is that it might be that dynamically these brains want to actually mix up, reconnect, attach to each other, combine into a single brain, or do other more complicated things. And so somehow here, instead of having S of B plus B prime plus B double prime, I should find something like S of some combined brain. And if you just look at the standard of the expansion, this is not gonna cut it. Not gonna see it. So actually there are, so what's going on is that it's somewhat analogous to superconductivity, funnily enough. So in superconductivity, you write an action for the fermions, and if you do calculations perturbatively in the fermion fields, you will never see superconductivity. Superconductivity happens because a bilinear of fermions is getting a VEV in the correct vacuum for the theory. So you're just working around the wrong vacuum. To do things properly, you need to figure out a technology to 2 perturbative expansion around a non-trivial vacuum where some degree of freedoms by linears have gotten a valve. And we find something similar here. So there is a sort of a more refined tooth expansion where you can allow some of the bilinears of fundamentals or antifundamentals to get a VEV. And after you do that, you will still get an expansion of this form, but you will have some action of sort of B merged with B prime. B prime that will merge with B L prime. Okay, so this is a sort of, I've never seen it quite written down that you can have these exotic tooth expansions. But it's sort of implicit in the fact that there are these sort of dualities where, you know, deep brains are dynamical things. So once you do a back reaction, they can do whatever they want in this back reacted geometry, whatever their action, you know, whatever is the configuration with least action. And presumably there will be a sum over saddles actually where they do different things. And so one has to learn how to deal with that. But we will. Actually, there was a senior faculty meeting so today, so I'll have to stop at 10:10. So perhaps I should. Okay.
Somebody. Okay. Can I ask one question?
Yes.
And this can happen even for the case that you wrote, that if you have only 2 brains, it's not that you put so many brains that they are very heavy and they form the geometry.
Even a single brain could probably reconnect in a complicated way, but no, but yeah, indeed. So this is an order of, yes, this is precisely what one could find confusing, that naively I'm putting 2 brains, the presence of this brain is not back reacting on the other brain, because it's too light, a single brain. But the existence of this brain allows this other brain to connect with it and present a new saddle to the problem. Okay. Now, let's go now to the chiral algebra. And which brains I'm gonna consider. So, as you remember, the chiral algebra was associated to having n brains that are wrapping sort of, say, x equal to y equal to 0 inside C3. So this is a two-dimensional object, so that it's called the D1. So people might call it the D1 brain. I resisted this terminology, but there is no fighting it. So n D1s. Okay. And what I can do is take another D1, transverse to it. I could put it, say, at z equal to 0, and maybe x equal to 0. But, you know, I could also move it a little bit. It doesn't actually need to intersect this. It just needs to get close to it to feel the back reaction. So I could also put an M here. And also, I'm going to try to sort of modify this theory at a place where these 2 brains come close to each other and intersect. So for now, this is giving modification at z equal to 0. So I'm going to get something like a local operator at z equal to 0. But and if I want to move that local operator somewhere else in the world volume theory of these ND brains, I'll just change this 0 into something else. So maybe I should call this z0. Call it z1 and m1. Okay. Now, what are the strings that are stretched between brains? So there are 0-dimensional fields, pretty much, because they only live at the intersection. You might say, wait, there is no intersection if I turn this on. Well, all that's going on is that these fields are going to have a mass controlled by M. So if M is large, then they're very massive. You can try to ignore them, but don't. And they are coupled to the degrees of freedom on the brain. How are they coupled? Well, as I said, they have a mass which has to do with the separation of these brains. So if, and remember that the volume fields of these three brains move the brains. So if these brains are decide to move in the X direction, the mass will change. So at the leading order, I would say that the action looks like this. I had this, my these fundamental fields. Or mine, I don't know, your preference. So I'm adding this to the action. But these are zero-dimensional fields. Actually, let me improve it a little bit. I'm going to change the equation to x plus u y equal to something. Allow me to rotate them a little bit. So here I put something like minus u y of z1. But also, now, as I was saying, I'd be free to change the action in various ways by the encouplings, which are controlled by the shape of this D-brain, the boundary conditions on this D-brain far away. So I could also try to change the shape of this D-brain to introduce more couplings. So for example, I could say, no, wait, I want my brain to live at, could have said perhaps x equal to a function of y. Right, I can do that. That's a perfectly valid solution, a polynomial in y. And then I would have gotten some more complicated polynomial in y here. So I could have had other coupling, right? And when you, right. Yeah, so this modification will have some couplings, which I will then match ultimately with modifications of the shape near the boundary, which means that if I want to study a correlation function where I put the brain, but I also put some excitations on the brain, I might insert a generative function like this, meaning taking derivatives of these couplings and pulling down modifications of whatever I'm doing. But, you know, for now, let me just ignore that. We'll introduce it later. So I'm nice. I have a path integral. I have my path integral of the old fields. I have the usual action. Not doing anything to that. And then I can add this for one or more brains. So I'm going to insert also in you know, deep psi bar, deep psi. Standard integral, not a path integral. And if I were to do actually the psi integrals, I would rewrite it as a correlation function of, well, determinants operator, determinant of mi minus x of zi minus ui of y of zi. Yes.
From the point of view of the field theory,
yes.
Why do we do a regular integral over size and not a path integral over size?
Well, that's zero dimensional. They leave at the intersection of the brains. You could say, well, what if this brain started parallel to the other and then I deformed it? I should include 2D fields. That would be true, totally true. So what happens is that you would have 2D fields, but the deformation sort of turns on some differentials or some part in the action which makes them massive away from the intersection point and integrating them away. So you sort of have, you'll be able to integrate away exactly this massive piece and go back to this. So you have a situation where everything except the value of the field at Zi can be integrated away exactly. So there are many ways to get to this final answer. But this is the sort of the most concise description that I know of the system of ND1 brains coupled to a perpendicular brain. So ultimately, in the quantum field theory, we are studying a correlation function of determinant operators. Determinant operators are pretty different from the operators we have been looking at before, which are traces, right? Traces or polynomial in the traces. In particular, a trace is something I can define uniformly in N. And the quantum numbers of a trace do not change as I change N. On the other hand, the determinant still has a uniform definition as I change N, but if I change N, the quantum numbers change. Like the determinant of X is the product of N X's. If I increase N by 1, I get an extra X there. So the quantum numbers have changed. And by expressing determinants as integrals involving extra auxiliary fermions, these determinants can be identified with brains. So that's how we say that inserting determinant is the same as saying that some brain is ending there near the boundary. Not some, any brain, just a D1 brain is ending at the boundary at a location Z at the boundary. And this parameter U controls the direction you're going to infinity in. So remember, the boundary is roughly, you know, the direction at infinity. The place where the CFT lives in the holographic dual is sort of, not lives, bad names. Sorry, I will not say any words because I'm saying bad words. Anyway. This tells you where on the boundary you're going, and why U and M are some information that tells you how are you approaching the boundary more precisely. Okay? And if I can get there, we will actually see it emerging from the calculation. But otherwise, we can also just try to use the dictionary. Remember, after Bach reaction, you can describe SL2C as something like that. And you say A, B, C, D, where A, D minus B, C is H bar N. Okay? And A is more or less the same as X, and B is the same as Y before Bach reaction. On the other hand, C over A, actually, I should really say they're literally the same. And when the Bach reaction changed the definition of the variable Z, right? do you remember seeing Buck reaction? Do you ever see the Buck reaction? No? Okay.
Sorry?
Yes.
Did you or not see the how the Buck reaction happens? Right, there was the Beltrami differential, which was something like the Bochner-Martinelli kernel, del over del z,
yes,
which means that del bar z is now omega Bochner-Martinelli. So I lose z, it's not good anymore. But del bar of xz is x omega Bochner-Martinelli, which is del bar of something. And so I can take, so it was a lambda, lambda. So I can take coordinates that are sort of x plus lambda x of 1 and y plus lambda y of 1. And this will be called, sorry, zx and zy. This will be called c and d. And this x1 and y1 have the property that sort of z, y, x1 minus z, x, y1 is sort of one, so that you get here. Very good. So, the fact that this brain approached infinity along this direction, I can still write as, you know, A plus U1 B equal to M1. Like this equation inside SLC. I also want it to come along Z equal to Z1. That's a little bit iffier. It means that I want C over A to approach Z1 as A and B goes to go to infinity. Which, you know, so which means I'm saying that C is equal to Z1A plus subleading. And actually, if you do some considerations, which I will not have time to discuss now, the subleading thing can actually be identified with the derivative of the action for the brain over this parameter M1. So I call the subleading thing P1. It's not super difficult. You can see a derivation in the paper with Kevin, but for now I'll just say it. There is this sort of kind of symmetry where you say that, you know, what I'm trying to say is that this equation for C is compatible with the equation for D, meaning if I multiplied right, because C over A, right, D over B minus C over A is lambda over AB. So you see, it corrects. So I could write D is equal to Z1B plus the same because this correction goes like 1 over a squared at infinity. Okay.
Sorry, David.
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit the cartoon again? Sorry.
Yes. Which one? The line?
No, the one on the top. No, that on the blackboard where you are now, on the middle.
Yes.
That cartoon. So where are the... Is C3 or is the R6 perpendicular to the three brains?
No. No.
What was...
So... This has a sort of C parallel to the brain.
Okay.
And a C two perpendicular to the brain. So we lost two of the scalar fields of the physical theory when I went to the Carroll algebra, and we lost two of the space-time directions.
Okay, so these were the previous lectures. And and in the picture, where is the C parallel? Is the vertical one?
Yes, that's right.
And that represents the...
The
perpendicular.
Yes, that's right.
And then we are inserting... These determinants are D3 brains, right?
Yes, which are wrapping directions perpendicular to the original D3 brains.
So... They are like this. They
yes.
are perpendicular.
Yes.
But why are you? Why are is D1 written instead of D3? Maybe it can.
Oh, I'm using the language of the topological string. So, I lost directions. So what was called D3 brains before are now called D1s.
Ah, okay. But physically they are.
Physically they are D3s.
Ah. Okay.
And actually, I swept something under the rug. So, I said these are fermions. You could have said. That at least implicitly, I used that fact when I wrote that. I could have put bosons here. I've got an inverse of determinants. Most of the calculation would have worked exactly the same way. What determines if these are bosons or fermions depends on what, somehow, if this brain has a Champaton bundle, which is bosonic or fermionic. It's just a choice I can make. If you track back in the physical theory, this has to do with this. With this being a D3 brain that wraps two, which so that we lost four directions, and you can ask which of the two this is wrapping. So this could represent either a local operator in the physical theory or a codimension two defect in the physical theory. And they would both give you a local operator in the Carroll algebra.
Can you explain that point
yes.
a little bit slower?
Yes. So there are two ways to get local operators in the Carroll algebra. One is to have a local operator in the physical theory. The other is to have a surface defect which intersects the Carroll algebra plane at one point. Both surface defects and local operators can be made out of probe D3 brains. You know, a D3 brain can wrap S1, sort of ADS1 times S3, or ADS3 times S1 inside ADS5 times S5. One will give you local giant gravitons, and the other will give you. So one will give you determinants, and the other will give you surface defects, where the for the theory is coupled to some 2D degrees of freedom. But by the time we get here, the only difference you see is that these are bosons or fermions, but they are zero dimensional in our case.
Then you just get determinant or 1/determinant.
That's right. That's right.
They both look like local operators.
That's right. In the Carroll algebra, they do.
But even in the physical theory, I thought determinant and 1/determinant, both are good operators. One represents characters of symmetric, and one characters of anti-symmetric, if I expand in this parameter M.
That's true. But I'm not sure that the one of the determinant. So that I...
The determinant is also attached to one point. You were saying things about the plane. I'm confused.
How would you do one of the determinant in terms of brains in the physical theory? It's a bit confusing. I'm not quite sure I know the physical brain which would give you 1/determinant.
Maybe I could ask a more general even question. So this determinant with just one M is a generating function for all the anti-symmetric
yes.
representations.
Actually, no, I think I know the answer. So even in the physical theory, this brain that we are putting to get the determinant is kind of instantonic, right? It doesn't extend a long time. Just finding a local operator. Mm-hmm. So I guess even for that brain, we could decide if we're going to put it bosonic or fermionic. So I think even the physical theory, sort of brains come in two types. There are the physical ones and there are the ghost ones, which if you wrap them a long time, the ghost ones are a bit dangerous. You need to use them wisely. But if you wrap them only along space, I think they're on an even footing. They represent instantons, and then you know which sign comes in front of an instanton in a correlation function maybe is not. It's not something the perturbation theory knows necessarily. It's part of the UV completion. I mean, this ties also in the discussion we're having with Jihong Tok, right? We say that D-brains represent determinants. Yes. But they can also play the role of ghosts. And
in other words, if you expand the determinant, it looks like a gas of strings, right?
Yes.
And if you could ask if you are overcounting, right?
Right.
Strings and the determinant at the same
time. Absolutely. So, I mean, the chiral algebra is a non-perturbative definition of the, if I really, you know, holographically. So, I mean, when I was trying to do the derivations here, I was in some kind of perturbative setting. There were things that the perturbative setting doesn't really know. So there must have been choices I implicitly made when I went to this fully non-perturbative thing, which is the chiral algebra. And then these choices will reflect on non-perturbative choices on the holographic dual.
So can you explain again what this M was in the physical theory, this MI? This MI was some separation?
Yes.
So the three brains, if I want to draw it in the original picture, what is the picture?
So if you do the usual ADS5 times S5 picture,
yeah.
You could have brains that sort of don't go all the way in, don't keep going all the way. Like you have an ADS3 times S1, and maybe the S1 is off the center of the S5. And then when it goes in, it shrinks. But then, yeah, so just put like that. It means that.
But before back reaction, when I just have the D3 brains.
Ah, yeah, before back reaction, it's just a separation. It means that they are not hitting the stack of brains, but they are grazing, you know, they're grazing it. So they get in, they go down into the throat, and then they come back out. And in the after-back reaction, it just means that, for example, if they wrap ADS3 times S1 in the physical theory, S1 times S3, like giant gravitons, right? Means that the S3 is not a maximal S3 inside S5. It approaches the maximal S3 as you approach the boundary, but it's a little bit off. So it controls the subleading behavior somehow when you approach the boundary, right? This is telling you that A over B equals minus U1 plus M1 over B. So as you approach the boundary at large A, large B, you're just going to a certain point in the internal directions, in the internal CP1. But if you include this, then you're approaching that at a very specific rate. Okay. So how do you compute correlation functions of the product of determinants? Yes?
And in the ADS 3 times S1 case, like M1, all these parameters would give you like the continuous parameters of the surface operator?
Right, there will be parameters of the surface operator, that's right, like the Gukovitan parameters or something like that. Yes, I've not looked at it carefully, so I might make a mistake.
So why, like that's why I asked about the symmetry breaking, because I thought that when you put a surface operator, like it could break.
Let's leave questions about the physical theory to questions. I want to focus on the twisted theory. Sorry.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
So determinant and 1/determinant, I can think of them as generating functions of very special character,
yes.
Fully symmetric and fully anti-symmetric.
That's right.
What about the general character?
Well, you could try to have a product of determinants. You'd have to be
the parameter MI, all evaluated at the same point.
So what you can do, you can define composite determinant operators.
In other words, my question is because I'm always used to seeing papers where people think that the physical operator is associated to a representation. but you are kind of hinting that equally physically are operators that are associated to a set of chemical potentials associated to the representation.
So the, a very general thing I could do is the following. I can build a big MK by NK matrix with coefficients like that, which coefficients are themselves matrices.
Mm-hmm.
You actually need to work a little bit harder because it's not strictly speaking BRST invariant. One has to sort of integrate over some of these, but let me ignore that for now. This will describe a combination of things going to infinity, but also you can expand it out to get very general representations with KN boxes.
So, but this object is, would have an interpretation as a particular stack of brains?
Yes, it is as a stack of brains.
Only the expansion term by term.
So you would have K D1 brains. But their shape would be determined by these matrices rather than the collection of numbers, meaning that these KD1 brains now have a volume fields, right, to describe their position, which are going to be some kind of a Z world volume field, which is K by K, and a Y, K by K, which, you know, equations of motion tell you that they should be kind of commuting with each other, but you can try to push it a bit. So you could try to have configurations of brains which come with a kind of a, some fields turn on, some of diagonal fields turn on in some weird way. But right, at the end, this gives you generating functions of, you know, tableaus of various shapes with KN boxes. Minus, I mean, because of this, you know, you start from a KN rectangle, and then you're missing some stuff. So it's expanding to powers of M. You can get a variety of things. Okay. Right, that can describe situations where I really have a collection of brains coming in and merging in complicated ways as they approach your stack of brains. But I'll discuss it. Perhaps, potentially. So how do you compute a correlation function of determinants? Turns out that the easiest way to do is actually to go back to this definition. Because in this definition, the path integral over the x, y, b, and c fields is Gaussian. So I can just do it. I'm going to get an integral over the psi's of e to the, now what's going to happen? I'm going to get, I still have the m term. And then the x's and y's will get recontracted between different determinants. And so I get some sum over I and j of something like ui minus uj over vi minus zj psi bar I psi j. Something like that. Probably shouldn't. Yes. But this is just a propagator for the x and y fields. Sorry, no, I made a mistake. I wanted to write I smaller than j, and there was supposed to be two terms. Okay, right. So, right, each x is coupled to sort of two fermions, and integrating with the gauge fields, sorry, the X and Y fields, just means that I'm introducing effective interactions which look like that. Right, so they're quartic in the fermions. Okay, now I got the final dimensional integral, that's better. It's an integral over fermions with quartic interactions, which sounds really dreadful. But it's precisely the sort of things I was mentioning, like you could see in a superconductor, right? You know, the four fermion interactions. And the trick to analyze this problem now is to make this Gaussian too. We can make it Gaussian by inserting yet another collection of auxiliary fields. Something like that. Just into some rows with some Gaussian integral, with a Gaussian term that allows me to deal with that. Let me rename these M's rho II so they can combine these two. Then I can do the path integral of the fermions. And sorry, I should have put some H bars around. There was a crucial 1 over H bar here. Let me just, yes, right, which becomes, which remains then 1 over h bar here in a lot of places. Okay, yes.
Why is not h bar?
Sorry, there wasn't 1 over h bar here too. There are 1 over h bars everywhere. Okay. So. Now I want to do the integral over the fermions because that's also Gaussian. And I'm left with an integral over the rows of determinant of rho to the power of n, because there are n fermions, e to the 1 over h bar, sum of zi minus zj over ui minus uj, rho ij squared. Probably rho ij, rho ji, sorry. Okay. Now, crucially, this term has an exponential for the n. This one has an exponential for the 1 over h bar, so they can compete in the large n expansion. They're both large. And so I can study a subtle approximation, this integral and subtle approximation. The subtle action looks like log log n log rho. Actually, let's put into lambda because I'm going to get rid of one of h bar in front of everything, plus sum of z minus z over u minus u rho rho. And so now I get a nice classical subtle equations.
You're putting one determinant only?
No, many, many.
Then do you really get just determinant of rho?
Rho, this is an I, a k by k, sort of. I had a rho ij. So, rho, these auxiliary fields I added were sort of one for each pair of determinants.
Okay.
And in a very concrete sense, they're allowing you access to fermion bilinears. Right, the derivative respect of rho of the action is a fermion bilinear. So the derivative of S over the rho ij at whatever is our saddle is going to give us back psi bar I psi j. So you can see that we're sort of trying to work around a place where the fermions might have a non-trivial valve, fermion bilinears. Okay, so, right. Raising things, yes. So, what are the saddle equations? They tell us that rho ij ui minus uj over zi minus zj equal rho inverse ij. And I like to write it like that. Okay. Very mysterious looking equations, right? But if we solve these equations, we plug them into the action, and then we can get information, right? For example, we're supposed to match whatever calculation we do with the D-brains. Right, this action, this action has a 1 over h bar in front, okay? Which means that we're really computing something like this. An e to the 1 over h bar times an action, which we want to identify with an action of some brain. Okay, now the magic happens. I'm still trying to understand why the magic happens, so I'm not sure I can justify it fully. But there is a way to convert this equation into the equations satisfied by a D-brain in SL2C. So I want to map. There is a certain canonical way to relate this to the problem of I have SL2C. And I want to find a D1 brain inside there, which satisfied those equations here. Like, as A and B become large, I want A plus UI B. I want a bunch of branches which reach out to infinity. And each branch satisfies that the relation A plus UI B equal MI, and also C over D goes like ZI. The MIs here are rho II and are fixed. And if you stare at the action for a moment, you see that calling the conjugate moment, they're actually inverse of rho II. So, what's the relation between these two problems? Okay, if holography works, they should be the same problem. That really doesn't look like it. But there is a trick. The trick is to define two matrices, which I would not be able to remember. But let me write it like this. And here there is probably something like rho plus A times the diagonal matrix. These are K by K matrices. Okay. Diagonal matrix where I'm going to put the U's. And here I define it as rho inverse plus A times a matrix where I put the Z's. And the magical fact is that these equations are equivalent to the requirement that B commutes with C. And also BC is equal to sort of minus 1 plus A D of A. Where D of A also has a nice linear expression like that.
I think of those as some sort of ADHM type.
Yes, absolutely. And this could be made more precise and probably generalized to all examples. We are working on it. The point is that once I have these two matrices and the commute, I can diagonalize them. So the eigenvalues give me, so I can solve sort of the determinant of B minus B of A equal to 0, and the determinant of C minus C of A equal to 0, and the determinant of D minus D of A equal to 0. And this A, B, C, and D will satisfy AD minus BC equal to 1. Sorry, I lost factor lambda along the way. Can be restored. But also, the form of these matrices guarantee that their eigenvalues behave like that. Right, when A and B are large, when A is large, sorry, these terms dominate. And by just perturbation theory, B is pretty much approximately diagonal with eigenvalues AU, and C is approximately diagonal with eigenvalues ZAZ. And actually, the leading correction to that is the diagonal part of rho, which is precisely M. And the diagonal part of C is actually the diagonal part of rho inverse, which is P. So we find that P lives here. Sorry, it was A. Which is great because P is del S over del M on both sides. So the fact we find the same P means that we have the same S. This is a function of the masses. So magically, we found that not only the same problem determines the saddles on the quantum field theory and on the string theory side, but they give you guys really match the action. So I get a complicated brain here, whose action is precisely the saddle of the correlation function determinants.
Could you make it work also for this more generic operator looking?
Yes. So we is one of the things I did with Annes for her side project.
So this complicated operator.
That's right. So essentially, you end up building some matrix, the matrix rho. Okay, you need to work a little bit harder, but you can write again rho. You can write the analogs of this rho and these matrices. They're not going to be diagonal anymore, but they're going to be block diagonal. So here you'll have some R's, and here you'll have some S's, and here you'll have some M's. And the fact that the equations sort of work map to the BRST invariance of this operator. So it takes a little bit of work. It's not immediate, but it does work. Yes.
What is the connection between the saddle equation for the rho and the mutually commuting set of matrices you define?
Well, right. So, let me see if I can give a 2 minutes answer, because then Pedro and I need to both run. So, there are many ways to talk about deep brains in a Calabi-Yau manifold. One is to talk about submanifolds. The other is something similar to what Nikita mentioned, the IDHM construction, where you start with a whole bunch of space-filling brains, ghost, normal and ghost ones, and then you turn on some fields and make them disappear everywhere except where you want them. So you could have some space-filling brains and then do some magic to them to get the brains you want. You could have done that in the gauge theory too, kind of. You could have taken space-filling brains, these would have added fields everywhere, and then you could have sort of killed most the fields almost everywhere except for the location where you want the size. Okay, so if you'd done that, the condition of the way you describe that these brains cancel everywhere except for some places is that you turn on some fields on those brains And those fields are like tachyons. They make the, they make the things go away. And the places where these fields are zero are places where the brains remain. So the fields are kind of like this B minus capital B and C minus capital C. Right. So presumably, if we had redone the analysis here using space, you know, fields that live everywhere, integrating away their joins, maybe we could have gotten to a place where the subtle equations somehow were really expressed in terms of the B's and the C's. But I have not done the exercise. I don't know if the statement is true. Otherwise, as it is here, it looks completely mysterious. Yes. So I'm totally trying to understand why it works, and why it works not just in this theory, but in any chiral algebra which has an holographic dual.